Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Legal matters.
Brought to you by Ntabiseng Dubazana, who is in studio with us this evening. Ntabiseng, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Ospimelo. How are you?
There are so many people who want to talk to you and ask you questions today. So we're going to be very, very busy. But how has your week been, first of all?
My week has been rather busy. Attended to court. Very interesting developments in one of my cases that's going on. You know, when the state witness messes up the state's case in the middle of cross-examination. So that was fun for me.
The state witness themselves.
Yes, under cross-examination. That was fun. But other than that, a lot of consultations, a lot of assisting people. So busy, busy, busy.
It's busy. Okay, yes. Let's open the lines for those who want your assistance as well. 086-000-959. People can send voice notes as well. You can remain anonymous if you like. Not a problem. You can send a voice note on 0636880959. This is an opportunity for you to ask any legal question. Ntabiseng Dubazana is here. And, you know, take your time. We've got about 40 minutes to do this. And so please try and do this as quickly as possible so that we can get to your matter. I know last week we weren't able to get to all of your questions, so if you can maybe send them through quickly, call in and Ntabiseng will try and assist. So we've got, I suppose, let's look at the two cases that you want us to talk about today.
All right, so this one I think is quite interesting and important because it deals with two things we've dealt with.
Yes.
Mothers who don't allow dads to have access to their children. And then also one where, in the very same case, wherein this particular mother is actually an attorney.
Mm, okay.
So it brought a very interesting dynamic to the matter. So there was a parenting plan that was put in place because mom and dad divorced. And in that parenting plan, the request, part of the agreement was that if you're going to travel with either of the children or both the children, you need to get consent.
Yes.
That's the law.
Yeah.
So if you don't have consent, you can't go anyway.
Mm.
So what does mom do in this scenario? Mom decides to book a holiday for Christmas and travels with the babies.
Mm-hmm.
And does not tell dad.
Oh, okay.
So now a few questions come in.
Did she leave the country?
She left
the
country.
How did she do that with her?
That's part of the questions that the court now needed to clarify. Yeah.
How is that possible?
How is that possible? Mm. What did you do? Did you commit fraud?
Yeah,
was there
an affidavit?
What did you do? Mm. So when this application for contempt of court was brought by dad to the court, to the High Court, the parenting plan was made in the Randburg Magistrates Court. So the contempt of court application was then sent to the Johannesburg High Court. And in that application, dad is applying for contempt of court, saying that you not only violated the court order by traveling with the kids without my knowledge, but also on the birthday of one of the girls, she did not allow any access per the parenting plan.
Hmm.
In her replying affidavit to all of this, she stated that she did not travel. Emphatically so. She said, I do not know what you're talking about. What do you mean? I never went anywhere. In fact, it's not even possible for me to go anywhere without your consent. So I don't know what it is you're talking about.
Oh my word.
And then dad said, okay. In fact, the court said, okay, no, it's fine. If you're insisting on that, we will then subpoena the travel records for that time for the specific airways that the dad says that you use or used to travel. They did so. The records came back. She did, in fact, travel with the kids.
So where does this stem from? What was the initial issue?
Well, the initial issue, I think it stems from the fact that she did not allow him contact with the minor child for birthday.
Okay. Oh,
and
I
then
see.
From that, that's when he discovered all these things that had happened.
He was looking for something.
He was probably looking for something.
Okay.
And then with all of that.
Were they married?
They were now divorced.
They were now divorced.
Yes. So this parenting plan came as a result.
As all divorces go. It's never fun.
It's never sweet at all. So this parenting plan had stemmed from that divorce.
Okay.
So as it always goes like we said. She then denies that she ever traveled with the kids, and then the records were subpoenaed, and then it showed that she did actually travel with the kids at that very same time. So now she wants to rectify the fact that she perjured herself.
Yo.
Because an affidavit is under oath.
Yeah. Yep.
So that is already now a criminal charge. Mm. Now the court...
She's a lawyer, you
she's
said.
She's a lawyer.
Goodness.
Admitted and practicing.
And that affects even her own career,
correct,
right?
Correct. Correct. So now the court now is faced with, are we dealing strictly with a civil contempt of court, or are we incorporating even the criminal aspect of it? Remember, when we make an application for contempt of court in civil court, the court has the discretion not to impose a criminal sanction, but still hold you in contempt nonetheless. So now the court was grappling with what it is that they have to do in this situation. And then the court said, listen, firstly, the career you hold, you're a practicing attorney, and therefore you should know better. The standard is held high. Not that if it was a normal person, they would not be deemed to have perjured themselves, but the standard is much higher for you. And you stated emphatically in your documents that you did not travel with this child, with the children. And here we are with the record before us. And what did the court decide to do? The court obviously found her to indeed be in contempt of court. And then over and above that, it said, the court said, the breaches of the court order have happened historically. And as such, and here's the problem, historically, it means it happened more than once, which is what we see all the time when dads go to court and say, I am not getting access, I'm not getting it. It's because it's a repetitive thing, and the courts don't really assist them until it's at this kind of juncture. But anyway, the breaches of the court order have happened historically, and as such, a coercive order was not appropriate. Given the gravity of her misconduct, a suspended custodial sentence was appropriate, alongside a referral to the NPA and the Legal Practice Council for further investigations. So now it means that she has a criminal record.
I was going to say, boy, I mean, and what, yo, guys, don't get your anger with each other. Allow you to know, because I don't think she thought through the lie. She thought she could get away with it.
Yes, and it caught up with her. So you cannot be a practicing attorney with a criminal record.
Yo.
And once it's referred to the LPC, now they have to do their own inquiry, and most likely they may refer you to be struck from
this is it,
correct? And then now you're stuck with only being most likely a legal advisor, but you can never ever practice again.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
We have a voice note already from Becky. Let's just see if we can get that voice note through.
I've got a medical aid, but then bang tata bang we debt to it because of like everything is covered for a medical aid. But to name the hospital, I can't say that on the street, on the air. But yo, over in King.
Okay.
All right. I think we've I think it died prematurely. I'm not sure. You know what? I'm going to ask that we try and see if this person can send another voice note so that we can hear the full story. We have it's a longish one. Let me read it. This is Richard.
Yes.
Okay. How are you, Osintabi Seng? I heard you speak to Pimelo on Point of View at Kaya, on a topic and subject was about ref claims, and this was on the 23rd of April, he says. I am Richard. I was involved in a car accident February 2023 at Zakani Pulusong Hospital, Gauteng Provincial Hospital, their MVA department. Mm-hmm. They told me in order to get hospital or medical records, I must pay about 1,700. Okay. So he wanted obviously the medical records so that he can process his claims. And again, 5,000 rand for a lawyer since I don't have cash. Is it true according to the law? And as well, I told them I claim for myself. They said even a ref They will need those hospital documents. You must pay them. Please advise me. Thank you. My contact numbers, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I understand what he's asking.
Yes.
And he can do this on his own, am I right?
He can. I think what they are trying to say, this is what I've encountered, even though we don't do REF, but this is what I have discovered when people came to consult. And of course, I referred them to the correct departments. The medical staff don't usually give up medical records without a letter from an attorney.
I see.
So
that
is
rubbish. Is that?
I don't know.
What nonsense is that?
Because it's
your information.
It's not their private property. But what I do know is that they give people a hard time until a letter from an attorney says we are requesting these records, failing which will make an application to the court to force you to give us these records. So perhaps they have an attorney that they usually work with who wants 5,000 rand or whatever for them to release the records. But yes, payment for the records is going to be there always. Even in court, when you're representing yourself, if you make copies of whatever, you're going to pay for it.
So let me just ask you this. When you get discharged from the hospital, can you ask for your records at that point?
Yes, you can. You have the right to do so.
And should you be paying?
Everything you're going to get from the
hospital,
you're going to pay for.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that would be common practice.
Yes, that's common practice.
The 1,700 rand would be common practice.
Yes, yes.
For you to get those records. And then the 5,000 rand for lawyer thing is not necessary.
No, it's not necessary.
But you are saying that generally that's common practice.
Yeah, that's what happens. They will tell you that without a letter from the attorney, we are not going to release the records. And most of the time is when the hospital is pretty much aware that they're, if it's a medical negligence, there will be a situation where they're pretty much aware that they were in the wrong in one form or another. But in this situation, it was an accident. So I do not understand why they require an attorney to uplift medical records, because those medical records, if it was a situation where he needs to go and get a second opinion from another doctor to confirm that his injuries were exactly what was that, then he needs to compare it from this record to that record so that it can be submitted to the court. So, but unfortunately, that's what happens. So, Utlafumanore, they usually have an attorney that they work with, and he's the one that does the runnings for them.
I must say, Ntabi Singh, you know, talking to you every week makes me realize how unfair the world is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I'm sorry, Richard, because I think it looks like you would have to have someone drop. Maybe somebody who, I don't know, maybe ask a lawyer friend if possible. Mm. I know he says he doesn't have money. And what a pity. Would a letter from REF suffice?
I think it would. I wouldn't really be sure, but what I can say
is, in other words, he can ask the whoever at REF to
the legal department
to say,
there,
give me a letter. You know, please furnish Mr. X with a letter because we need to process his payment.
Correct.
You think that would help?
I think it would help. And if he struggles with that, he must go to a law clinic. Because legal aid does not do RAF matters.
Richard, law clinic would be at VITS maybe?
Yes, VITS and UJ, I know they have their law clinics. They can assist there.
Richard, try and get hold of the two universities we've just referred to, and let's see if they can help you at no cost.
Yeah.
Okay, so that may be something that you'll be able to get going, if possible. If you want more information, just give us a call, and then we will try and assist you there. Okay, so we have the other case. Also medical negligence.
Wait, is it medical negligence? You see, I've lost it now because I was talking on...
the cerebral palsy child.
Oh, no. Isn't that the old case?
We actually looked at this, ne?
Yes, I think we have. Mm-hmm. This was employment equity and police appointments. So... remember how we've been talking on employment equity and correcting the unfairness and the imbalance usually that is in the workplace, and especially the new bill that's coming through with the Employment Equity Act, how they're intending on doing that. Mm-hmm. So this case I think it feeds into what would possibly be that. So in this situation, a one police person, Mr. Berger, mm-hmm. had applied to be a warrant officer in the Forensic Detective Services. And in so doing, he did very well. He got a 73% pass and he did very well, basically. However, a colored individual, Mr. Hartzenberg, who's got a 65%, was appointed instead of him. So he took it for...
How would you know?
I think he probably requested the marks so that he knows how much his opponent got, because he probably have deemed that the appointment was unfair. So it probably started as an internal complaint first to say, I'm aware that I got more.
But he's not allowed to know.
Probably he made a request. You know, you can request in terms of POPI.
Yes.
To make an application
but
for
would,
that.
Would they be right to give you another person's information? Your own information, yes.
You can make an application to get somebody else's private information in terms of the POPI Act.
You can.
You can make an application.
Yeah, but they are allowed to give it to you?
Yeah. If the court says so, then... You can get that information, especially if you can show that it's within the interest of justice for you to be given that information. For example, this recent case that just happened against Meta.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so that is something like that. Private individuals' information had to be handed over because it was in the interest of justice. So in this situation, he then complained and said, why would somebody who got a lesser mark than him be appointed? And then he took it to the bargaining council to complain and say it was unfair labor practice. And then the SAPS then defended it to say that they are instructed by they can't deviate from the national instruction 3 of 2015, which is what governs how they employ individuals, which vested promotion approval authority in the divisional commissioner, and in disregarding the 10% scoring rule that should have rendered equity considerations irrelevant given Berger's significant higher score. So we are now balancing the situation. And then it said the review test was applied, which requires determining whether the arbitrator's decision was one that no reasonable decision maker could have reached. And then the arbitrator, which is now in the bargaining council, had said, had found that the SAPS inclusion of additional step in the advertisement requiring the National Commissioner's endorsement was justified to ensure consistency and equity across promotions. Remember the Dis-Chem case where managers were complaining to say that people are getting promoted purely from the race, color of their skin. And if you're not white, you're not going to get managerial position. And if you do get a managerial position, it doesn't pay the same amount that the white managers are getting. So this is what the SAPS is trying to counter. So they're not only looking at qualifications in the sense that you scored higher, you did this.
Equity.
And that was basically his complaint, to saying this equity is therefore discriminating him and marginalizing him in this situation. So when the bargaining council found against him, he then took it to the labor court to say that the labor court maybe can see differently from what the commissioner did. And the court said that the arbitrator's conclusion that SAPS' decision was rational and aligned with the employment equity goals was reasonable, as the advertisement explicitly reserved final approval for the national commissioner. So it's not the internal people that say, final, and Tamsin is getting this position. The national commissioner still has to look at it and then compare and make a decision. So the decision did not rest with the people that were in that particular department. It went to the national commissioner. And then the argument that the arbitration ignored material evidence was rejected, as the applicant had not adequately proven that SAPS acted arbitrarily or irrationally. If it was an individual that was tasked with this, it could have been argued that they were biased, they were irrational, whatever the case may be. But it had a few steps before the appointment. It went from point A, then from point A it went to point B, and then finally it went to the commissioner. So it went through three different stages before appointment was done. Mm. So it cannot be said that it was irrational or arbitrary that the appointment was made. And then the court further said the arbitrator correctly applied the principles of fairness and equity, and the applicant failed to demonstrate that the outcome was disconnected from the facts or legally unattainable. The applicant's failure to timely challenge the scoring and procedural deviations during arbitration undermined the review grounds. The review was therefore dismissed.
So a few things, apart from what they're saying about, you know, obviously he delayed also in making the application. But could he argue that, and maybe you and I don't know this, that, for instance, the advert had to be clear that this is an empowerment position?
That's what he was arguing, to say that the advertisement,
in other words, you guys should not have wasted my time. I would not have, the advert should have stated that particular persons are preferred for this position.
Yes, and that is what he actually argued, to say that the advert did not kind of
was not clear
that. But when the advert was cut and put into the bundle, it says that it explicitly reserved final approval for the national commissioner.
Got you. So even though it did not state that this is a position where we would prefer maybe black, female, or whatever the case may be, the decision still rests with the commissioner.
Correct.
And whatever the rationale that the commissioner will use is the final decision.
Yes. And that's the final decision. And also with regard to this N13/2015 that is put in place with the SAPS to make sure that equity is dealt with across the board. So
We've got a voice note in Tabise.
Can I please get a bit of education, Yana, as to how does compensation fund work? If you're injured on duty with an accident using a company car, then your case was closed in December, meaning the last report was submitted in December. Then you try to reopen it again in February. How does it work? Are you not allowed to reopen your compensation fund in February, a month or two later after your injury on duty? Can you even reopen the injury on duty or not?
It sounded like she was about to get
in another accident.
We we should not have said that.
No.
So, okay. She's saying
she got injured on duty, and then she went to go open a file with the compensation fund, and then it was closed, and then she went to go reopen it. So the way that the compensation fund works is that you lodge a claim either through yourself directly or through your employer. Now, if your employer is not registered with the compensation fund, there's going to be problems.
Because they're the ones that are actually supposed to be paying the compensation.
That is correct.
Fund. It's like an insurance.
Correct. It's basically like UIF. If you now are retrenched or whatever, you can go and claim from the UIF. So that's the first thing. Was your employer part and parcel of the compensation fund? Yes. And if the answer is yes, then what the rules say is that once the claim has been opened, they will then look at the assessment report. So they will look at the doctor's report that would come and the assessment report, and then if necessary they can request that you go to a second one so they can see if the injuries are consistent with what was said in the first report. In that time, then usually what would happen is that they would pay over a certain amount of money to your employer, which would then be paid to you, right? And then once they have done their investigations and they've found out, they have conclusive evidence that everything that happened whilst you were doing your duties for the company, then they will then say that there is a claim, and then they continue paying you for whatever period that is deemed for the application, or what they deem in the assessment would be appropriate to pay for that.
Just, I want you to play the voice note again, if you can, and a few things I think we need to clarify.
Okay.
Can I please get a bit of education, Yana, as to how does compensation fund work? If you're injured on duty with an accident using a company car, then your case was closed in December, meaning the last report was submitted in December. Then you try to reopen it again in February. How does it work? Are you not allowed to reopen your compensation fund in February, a month or two later after your injury on duty? Can you even reopen the injury on duty or not?
Okay.
So that for me is the important part. First of all, if you are in a real scenario,
yeah,
you are at work. I think it says she got injured while on duty, but she was in an accident.
Yes.
Because it's two intertwining things,
yes,
here.
Yes.
First of all, what does and should happen? If you are getting, if you get injured, let's say you are in a firm, but in your case it was an accident while on duty. What should have happened? As soon as she gets to the doc, whoever sees her first should lodge that,
yes,
as an injury in the workplace.
Yes.
Because immediately what happens is that the system, they are actually able to check immediately at the hospital or the clinic or whoever sees you, and that kicks in immediately. So you don't wait later
to lodge.
The lodging happens immediately.
Yes.
So if you are injured, let's say we were here in the studio and then something fell on us right now.
Mm-hmm.
What should happen is that as soon as we are wheeled out of here to get to the hospital,
mm-hmm,
it is stated at the very entrance admission space where they are told these people are people who came from the workplace.
Yes.
And that gets processed from there. Because,
yes,
and I'll tell you why, because sometimes people who get injured at the workplace, ne, for instance,
mm-hmm,
don't have medical aid
most of the time.
Yeah. However, they would be able to take you to a private clinic down the road.
Correct.
And the system should be able to kick in at that point, mm-hmm, already, where you are taken care of, because that compensation fund issue comes in.
Yes.
They have a relationship. They would be able to tap into each other's systems,
mm-hmm,
and you wouldn't have to worry. The part where so what I'm not sure about is why was the file closed to begin
with? She says that the last report was,
yes,
put in. So if the last report was put in, then it means there was nothing else could
That's
have
my
been
point.
Done. So if you're reopening
for
it,
what
are you reopening it for?
That's the question.
So that's why perhaps they wouldn't allow. But you can uplift your file so that you can see what's in there.
But if it's possible to send a voice note again, I think please do that. Because I'm also trying to understand whether did you initially pay out of pocket, which was not meant to be?
Yeah.
That's first thing.
Mm.
And if you did, perhaps there was already a conversation between yourself and the employer,
yeah,
about pay or process or whatever the case may be.
Yes.
Bring us your invoices or your documentation and then we will process it. That I think is very important, mm-hmm, to say. Were you authorized to do this, knowing that the employer is actually someone who's compliant with the compensation
Correct.
Fund? Because you should not have made the assumption that they are if they were not.
Yes.
That's one of the issues that,
yes,
I'm not clear on. Because generally, if we haven't got that clarity, you then probably made the assumption that you were covered,
mm-hmm,
and maybe you are not. And that's maybe where the murky waters lie.
And now another question that I would have is that the car accident,
yeah,
that you were involved in, was it the office car? Was it your own car?
All of that.
And, you know, how does that work in?
And another thing, just to make the thing a bit more murkier.
Yeah.
Perhaps the contestation is exactly that.
Yes.
Perhaps the contestation is, were you actually at work?
Yes.
Because and I know it's always difficult. These
Definitely.
Things are not nice. But the argument maybe being, were you actually at work? Were you doing work?
Yes.
Or are you taking advantage of the hour in which the accident happened? All of those things come into play.
There was... Oh, okay.
All right. I don't know. I think let's go to Karabo.
Okay.
I'm hoping Karabo is the person... All right. Is it floral? Floral? Hello? Floral.
Hello, how are you, Pamela?
But I'm sorry, I wasn't sure if Floral is your name. Is Floral your name?
Yes, Flora is my name.
Flora, ay, mantando, ay, suka. Aha. Askisi, Flora. Okay, how are you?
I'm all good, thank you.
I'm fine. Okay, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Okay, was this your story?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is my story.
Okay, Ntabiseng, you go ahead.
All right, so the vehicle that you were using, was it the office vehicle?
It was a company vehicle.
Okay, all right. And then walk us through the process. When you went after the accident, what happened exactly?
So after the accident, I was taken by an ambulance to the hospital where they first saw me. And when I got there, unfortunately, the employer could not get to me on time.
Okay.
So I was alone during that entire process, even at hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, because I had my medical aid at the moment, my card, mm-hmm. then everything was then built into the medical aid.
Okay.
Then later on, I went then, because my employer was contacted immediately when the car accident happened, because we were working outside, we were like on the field.
Okay.
So that's what happened, yes.
All right. And then thereafter, when everything was done and dusted, were you then able to lodge a complaint with your employer or with the compensation fund or through your employer to the compensation fund?
Yes, it was through my employer with the compensation fund.
Okay.
However, most of the stuff were already billed onto my medical aid, where the hospital did indicate that they cannot repay me because the employer had to even provide a motivation to say why did they submit the documentation late, because my documentation was submitted, I think it was a week later after I was
admitted into the hospital. Okay.
Yes.
After admission or after discharge?
So it was after discharge, actually. That's when I actually went to the employer to request all the other documentation that were needed or were requested by the hospital for them to process everything. Yes.
All right. So the compensation fund is the one that's complaining why the information was submitted late.
And in a way, they're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they could have, even though they arrived late at the hospital, still they could have gotten everything and submitted the information to the compensation fund. That's where the real issue is, ne?
Yes.
All right. So in December, you said the file was closed because the last report was put in. What is exactly the last report you were making mention?
Because after that, I was attending physio, then was then feeling better around the time, and then I was sent back to casualty to now close the case because I was released so that I can go back to my full duties.
Mm-hmm.
But however, in January, the pains related to the injury started coming back, and I had to now go back to the hospital to request assistance regarding this to reopen the case. So hence, it was like a month or two after the case was now. Then they said it was closed. Yes.
Oh, okay. So, all right, now I get it. So it means that the initial file, which is accident, therefore in hospital and therefore claiming compensation, that part is closed.
Mm.
So now, because you were deemed fit to go back on duty, you need to now, you're going to open another
new case.
Yes, you have to
it's
open
not the
another
old one.
File. It's not the old one. You now have to open a new file to say, and with the report from a doctor that confirms that the pains you're currently going through now are a direct result from the accident that you were involved in, so that they can now issue out a new file, and then they can start the process. Akira, you still have to go through some kind of physio in order for you to be deemed okay, so that the pains are put away because you're paying through medical aid. Akira. So with that, then you have to open a new file. Does that make sense?
I actually did that, hence now my concern to say, am I even allowed to actually do a reopening? Because the doctors that saw me did submit all the documentations and the motivation to say why they need to do it, because I did MRI scans and everything where they had to refer me to other doctors or specialists as well. But however, now when I went to my employer to request this, they indicated to me that the hospital is the only one that can assist me. They cannot assist me further. However, the hospital is saying the employer or myself.
I was going to say, the employer should be part of the process because they're the ones who are actually compensation funds clients.
Correct, not you. And it's incorrect for the employer to say that
go
a
to your
doctor can't do anything. It has to be specifically the hospital. No, a doctor's report is all that is required to prove the link, and then for them to open a case with the compensation fund.
Let's put it to you this way, Florane. In the event, and I'm not saying this will happen, but let's just say it was a major, major injury. And what then subsequently happens is that actually it affects your work.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? The employer can't now suddenly pretend like this is not their problem.
Yeah.
It is most definitely their problem, because we don't know. Let's say right now it feels like pain that's bearable.
Mm.
But maybe it's long-lasting injury.
Yeah.
The employer has to be part of the process. They have to be part of the process.
Yes. And the main reason that they have to be part of the process is that if it does affect your work in that manner, they may have to consider putting you on medical leave, boarding, and board you.
And they are part of that
process. And
they're
part of that. So if they fail to assist you with this, then they have failed you in terms of the LRA themselves. So they are wrong as the employer to say that only the hospital can do this, and then the hospital says only the employer. It has to be done hand in hand with both.
Let's ask the uncomfortable question for Naflora. Is the employer reasonable?
I would say the employer is not reasonable because, as you're explaining, I have been affected when it comes to my work, where now I'm going through, I've went through the doctors where they are sending me to occupational therapists by the employer because they had to find reasonable accommodation for me to be accommodated when it comes to now doing my work.
Yes.
So I am going through that process with them. But however, when it comes to the process of reopening the case, then that one has reached a dead end, because when I go back to the hospital, that is now where I try to reopen the case with.
Mm.
They have done, they've given me all the documentations to resubmit. Now all I have is what they indicated to me, that the hospital, the doctor, I need to go back to the doctor, and they've given me everything. So it's, for me, it's, I've reached a dead, and I don't know if it allowed to even reopen or not. Because they told me that it's written down where they said that only if I have to undergo surgery, that's when I can be able to reopen the case.
Where is it written down? In the compensation file?
Email.
Or in the work
just
file?
An email. It's just an email indicating when I was making a follow-up regarding this matter.
Is this the employer telling you this?
Yes, HR.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
If it's not in the policy, if it's not in the law, then HR must substantiate where they get this information from. Buying gagai.
I think Tabi saying she needs legal help. I think it's beyond her fighting.
Yes.
I think you need legal help.
You know what? I would also suggest, okay, yes, legal help 100%. But if you have all of this, it also boils down to unfair labor practice, because what they're doing is not correct. So you can refer the matter to the CCMA for unfair labor practice, in that I was in an accident as a direct result of doing my job. It was in your car. Yes, the first file was closed based on X, Y, and Z. But I am now suffering the consequences of that. So, you know, I don't understand why you are refusing assistance and say only if I need surgery. Because as it is, like you just said, they're trying to accommodate you because of the pain that you're feeling as a direct result of the accident. So, yes, go have a quick consultation with an attorney so that they can go through your papers and see what it is that is written, and then assist you in terms of at least filling in the referral document to the CCMA for unfair labor practice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be a longish journey.
No problem. Mm.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you very, very much. Okay. We've got a voice note as well in Tabi Singh.
Okay.
Here's a quick one. The company I'm working for has decided to go under, is it Section 138, whatever it's called, and start retrenching, right? So what they, the process is what I'm concerned about. They gave notice, let's say on a Wednesday, to say, guys, we're going to undergo retrenchment, right? Then on Thursday, they invited the people, the office staff, the support staff from the office proper. Invited them to call it a meeting, presentation, whatever. This is what's going to happen. This is the whole procedures. This is basically the retrenchment process that's, that you're about to undergo. And then the very next day, being the Friday, they started handing out retrenchment letters. My question is, Kande, doesn't retrenchment, isn't like a plan? So at least give people 3 months to, you know, sort themselves out, or even voluntary retrenchment, and eventually by the 3 months comes, some people may have taken, have decided to take packages, and by that way come the 3 months, you're like, okay, we don't need to retrench as many people as we were planning to, because some people have taken retrenchment packages. How does it actually work?
No, man. It sounds to me that you were given notice, right, in terms of Section 189 of the LRA for a retrenchment process that is about to be undertaken. The fact that you were given retrenchment letters does not mean that you're being retrenched. So if I knew what the content of that letter is, but the usual contents would be, kindly note that we're undergoing, undergoing retrenchment. This is the packages that are available. Make a choice. It's not going to be a group situation where they talk to you about, let's give options. It's an individual one-on-one.
In the, in, even though the discussion is about, it's about the business, yes, and what the business is doing.
Yes. And then they're going to tell you in that, in that package, in that little letter, that if you've worked, usually they start with the last one in as the first one out. And then they're going to go individually to you to say that looking at the company's financial situation, this is what we have as an offer for you as an individual. We can offer you the normal retrenchment package, which is 1 week's pay for every year that you have worked in the business. Alternatively, we can pay you 10,000 rand. Alternatively, we can move you to another department with lesser pay. So those letters, that's how they usually would look like. So if they look like that, those letters, then you're still in the consultation process. It hasn't ended. So yeah, maybe if you can clarify what the letters look like, we would know what is happening. So just the letter doesn't mean you've been retrenched. Yes. Okay.
It's a notice.
It's just a notice for now. Yeah.
Hector is also sending us a voice note.
Okay.
I have a question. My question is, I want to change my surname to my father's surname. Now, the problem is my father passed away when I was five. My mother has no contact with my father's family. I've tried to look for them. I found my father's sister, but she's married now as well, and she doesn't know where my grandmother is, or how to find them, or where my father is buried. My father left me a Provident Fund, and I've contacted that Provident Fund. Well, the money was paid a few years ago, but now in contacting them now, I need information, like my father's information, and they refuse to share that with me, saying it's against the Poppy Act. I just want to find out, is there anything that I can do to try or to assist me? Because even the surname that I'm using now is not even my mother's surname. It's a surname she picked up from the family that raised her. I want to use my father's surname. Is there anything I can do?
So it sounds like two issues. So
you can, you can get an affidavit. Your father's sister, who is already married to somebody else,
yes,
it's not a train smash. Your father's sister can use her maiden surname ID or birth certificate, whatever she has.
Yeah.
You guys can go to the police station and you can get an affidavit and then go to Home Affairs. So she's your alibi. It's not all lost.
I'm actually dealing with a case very, very similar to these facts.
Yeah.
And with him, with my client, the Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs, said that no, they're not going to change it. He needs some kind of documents or what. Yeah. They're giving him hell. That's the bottom line. So what I then did is reach out to a colleague who then showed me what he had done for his for his client. So what you can do is make an application in the High Court to enforce or force Home Affairs to change your affidavit. And you can use whatever reason you want to change, because it's your family, it's cultural reasons, you don't want your surname and your heritage to be lost, whatever it is. And then with that court order, you take it to Home Affairs and then they can change your surname.
Yeah.
And with the fact that they cannot the Provident Fund people cannot give you information, how then did they pay out to you
the first time
if they couldn't give you information? Yes, they're the ones seeking you. You are the child. Did you show them that you are his child? Do they have proof that you are his child, and so that they can pay to you? So what's the difference now with you requesting information? That doesn't make sense. But also, this is insurance, so they tend to be a little bit hard-headed. So usually when they get a call or a letter from an attorney, they tend to then give up information. So go see an attorney. Yeah.
Okay, where were we? Before we went to I think there is, I'll tell you now, I think there is a, okay, that discussion, I think that voice note was a little bit muddled up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think his father's sister should be enough.
Yes, it should be more than enough.
I don't even think you need to go to court for that. I think you can go to the police station and you can get affidavits, and I think you can take her with her documents as well.
Yes, especially her maiden.
Either the certificate or whatever, the old ID, if she had an old ID, things like that.
Yes,
should be able to assist. Gosh, Thabiseng, I think we're going to have to wrap it up because of time. Mm-hmm. If we start a new discussion now, I think we'll be too late.
Okay.
Where do people find you?
So people can call us on 087-265-8010. They can send us a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523. Send us an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za.
Thanks, folks. We are back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.